T.R. Kanakammal. A blessed soul was absorbed in the Master. In the same manner, she had lived her 88 years, totally surrendered and prostrate at his feet. T.R. Kanakammal was perhaps the last living devotee who left all worldly attractions behind to reside in the holy presence of Sri Bhagavan before his Mahasamadhi in 1950. She first remembered seeing his beatific smile on a visit to him when she was 8. From that time onwards, she was completely captured in the net of his grace. At the age of 13, she declared to her parents that she would never have any interest in family life and pleaded with them not to get her married. Her pleading failed and she was married the same year. But before the event, she extracted a promise from her father that if at the time she came of age and was expected to join her husband, he would not force her to do so if she wished otherwise. And she had the same vairagya a few years later when the time arrived. Her parents were very pious people and eventually allowed her to go and live by the side of Sri Ramanashramam in the year 1946 when she was in her early 20s. Since then, Thiruvannamalai has been her residence and Bhagavan Ramana her sole anchor and support. On Jayanti morning, 1st of January 2010, Kanakammal circumambulated the Matribhudeshwara Shrine and then entered Bhagavan's Samadhi Hall. Walking around the Samadhi, she stopped on the north side to gaze at the Lingam of the Maharishi while it was washed in preparation for the Grand Puja that was about to take place, commemorating the 130th birth anniversary of Sri Ramana. Right at that place, she collapsed and was absorbed into her Master and Lord. How fitting an end for one who knew no other in her long life than Bhagavan Sri Ramana. Kanakammal was an inestimable source of inspiration to the legions of devotees who sought her presence. She left us her reminiscences, cherished memories in English, and several other books which shed light on the teachings of Bhagavan. What follows are some transcribed reminiscences from a videotaped interview taken in 1999. How to speak? I would sit silently before Bhagavan. I was unable to ask him questions, but I would listen attentively whenever he answered others' questions. After all, even if I asked him, the replies would be the same. Occasionally, when I felt like putting a question to Bhagavan, something within me would ask, would Bhagavan know about your doubt only if you asked him? Is he not within you also? Is it necessary to put your doubts in words? Such thoughts would prevent me from speaking out. But again, I would observe devotees like Devaraja Mudaliar, G.V. Subbaramaya, Sambasiva Rao and others conversing freely with Bhagavan and wonder, these people are so free with Bhagavan, then why not me too? In those days, Bhagavan was sitting in the Jubilee Hall. I would enter from the old hall and Bhagavan would be able to see me only after I turned into the Jubilee Hall. A wall would obstruct his view until then. In the old hall, I would muster courage and resolve that I would definitely speak to Bhagavan on that day. But the moment I turned into the Jubilee Hall, all my courage would evaporate. I would almost feel something tangibly dropping away from me, as if something were being emptied out. My walk would slow down considerably. Beyond a point, I would practically have to drag myself towards Bhagavan. To compound matters, on some such days, Bhagavan would look directly at me. I could not bear it when Bhagavan looked directly at me. The intensity of his gaze would push me inwards. In such situations, I would just prostrate and sit down quietly, not even bothering to go up front near him. Bhagavan's look would push me inside, and I would sit quietly there for the whole day. This is what would happen to me again and again in his presence. Eager to talk to Bhagavan, I sought the help of Anandamal, who often sat next to me. "I want to talk to Bhagavan," I told her, "but I am unable to bring myself to do so." However, despite the absence of words, I still get the peace and satisfaction that I would if I talked to him. "What should I do?" Anandamal smiled and remained silent. The next day, I wanted to go for a pradakshina around Arunachala. As I could not go alone, Anandamal would accompany me. When I went to take Bhagavan's permission, at about 5 a.m., no one else was present. I thought this would be my best opportunity to speak to Bhagavan. As I prostrated before him, I thought, "What do I ask him?" On such occasions, I would think, "What do you know? What will you ask this divine being at whose very sight you become tongue-tied?" All my questions would then remain bottled up inside me. On that day, somehow, mustering courage, I managed to speak out, "Bhagavan, I am going for pradakshina." I did not know what else to say. Bhagavan, who was reclining on the sofa, came forward towards me and said, "Who? What?" I then realized that although I requested permission to go for pradakshina, no sound had come from my mouth. Only my lips had moved. Again, I tried telling Bhagavan with the same result. Bhagavan then said, "Oh ho, so you are going for the pradakshina? Who is accompanying you?" Anandamal, who had come to the hall by then and was standing beside me, said, "Bhagavan, I am going." Bhagavan said, "Very good, very good," and gave a beatific smile. Thus, despite several opportunities to do so, I was never able to speak to Bhagavan. So, how could I ask him anything? And what was I to ask? Some people told me to ask him whatever doubts came to me in my sadhana, but then it would occur to me that if we do sadhana the way Bhagavan asked us to, then there is absolutely no room for doubt. Such doubts are only on account of our own mistakes in not following Bhagavan. Thus, I never asked Bhagavan any questions. Look of grace. This incident took place when Bhagavan had moved into the new hall. During those days, the front row closest to Bhagavan was reserved for important people. Although Bhagavan did not know about it, there was a specific unspoken seating arrangement, and others who occupied those places would even be asked to go and sit elsewhere. On this day, Rauni Mazumdar and myself were sitting by the window at the end of the hall when we noticed that the front row was empty. Rani suggested that the two of us could sit there close to Bhagwan. I agreed. The front row began at the pillars closest to Bhagwan's couch. In order to give people room to move about, no one could sit right beside the couch. On seeing the two of us, a Telugu lady called Kameshwarama also came and sat next to us in the front row. The three of us were directly facing Bhagwan. As soon as we had settled there, Bhagwan began looking directly at me. Unable to bear the intensity of his direct look, I immediately closed my eyes. How long I remained like that, I do not know. But sometime later, I opened my eyes and found Bhagwan seated motionless, looking at me just as before. Again, I closed my eyes. Sometime later, Mauni Srinivas Rao came with the day's mail. Hearing Bhagwan talk to him, I opened my eyes. However, I was still in the same state that I was in when my eyes were closed, and whatever was happening did not really register in my mind. After attending to the correspondence, Bhagwan got up to leave for the cowshed. I got up along with everybody else, but again without any real awareness of my surroundings. Kameshwarama, who had been sitting next to me, hugged me and said, "Kanakamma, you are extremely fortunate. Ever since you sat there, Bhagwan has been steadily looking directly at you until when the Mauni came with the mail. You have got everything. Bhagwan has given you all that you need." So saying, she hugged me close to her, but I was in no state to give a reply. I just told her, tears are streaming down my eyes. I don't know what to say. The waves of peace coming over me kept me from talking. The power of Bhagwan's presence. Several prominent personalities and people of high social standing, wealth and prestige would visit Bhagwan. Seated inside the hall, when I observed them coming to meet Bhagwan, I could see that they were very conscious of their status, position and power. Their walk and bearing would clearly display such a consciousness. However, the moment they crossed the doorway into the hall and walked into Bhagwan's presence, there would be a remarkable transformation in their behavior, almost like from that of a tiger to a kitten. Without being told anything, they would automatically fold their hands and stand bowed in respect before Bhagwan. We may see a form sitting on the couch, but the real Bhagwan is the spiritual force that radiates everywhere and subdues everybody's ego, even as they enter his presence. Everyone has to remove their ego and leave it outside, as it were, and sit quietly in Bhagwan's presence. Another thing about Bhagwan was that his look would never vary, irrespective of whether the person was a long-standing devotee or somebody visiting casually for the first time. It is we who interpret his looks according to our own state of mind. There would be no differentiation in his looks. Still, everybody could tell what he wanted to convey by his look. Such was the characteristic of Bhagavan's look, and it was unique to him. His continued presence. The wonder of Bhagavan is this. At least people like us were fortunate to see Bhagavan in the body and live with him. Our attraction to Bhagavan was greatly enhanced by being able to observe him in daily life. But even if one goes to Sri Ramanashramam today, one can see devotees enter the hall with tears in their eyes, prostrate before Bhagavan and meditate. For how long, even they do not know. Whenever they learn about some old devotee of Bhagavan who is still alive, they immediately seek them out and tell them, "You have been so fortunate to live and meditate in Bhagavan's physical presence." We get such peace of mind even in our short and infrequent stays here. For people like us who have lived with and enjoyed the physical presence of Bhagavan, being devoted to him is no great deal. What happened to me would have happened to you also had you been there in my place. Today, I find people who have never seen Bhagavan physically, never heard his voice or listened to his upadesha, sit in the old hall or the samadhi hall, oblivious of themselves, often shedding tears and going round the hall as if impelled by some unseen force. What gives these people their experiences? As Bhagavan always said, "Is this body Bhagavan?" When somebody expressed sadness at having to go back home from the ashram, Bhagavan said, "What am I to do? You say that this body is Bhagavan. I say that it is not. Now, if you insist, what am I to do?" To others, he would say, "Look, he says he is going to a place where I am not." These new devotees of Bhagavan are proof of all he told us. In those days, one could count the number of devotees on one's fingers. Today, there is not enough space in the meditation hall, and we have devotees sitting in the samadhi hall and the mother's temple. A new dining hall has become necessary. It is Bhagavan's wonderful shakti that draws people here and keeps them here. After all, it is said that one gets moksha when one even thinks of Arunachala. There is hardly a person who does not long to return to Arunachala even as he is departing after a visit. He would leave wondering when he would have the next darshan of Bhagavan. Only now he refers to Bhagavan's samadhi rather than his physical body. It was at Arunachala that goddess Ambika became one half of Lord Shiva. Hence, at Arunachala, the meditations of women will definitely attain fruition. Also, there are no temples for the mothers of Sri Rama and Sri Krishna, but Bhagavan himself had a temple built for his mother, Aragammal, at Arunachala. Nobody can say how big the ashram will grow in the future. In fact, Bhagavan's power and influence have grown stronger since his Mahasamadhi. Muruganar once said, "Bhagavan's real power will be seen not now, but only a few hundred years after his physical body is no more. But we will not be around to see those days." Just as Bhagavan used to guide devotees when in his body, he continues to guide people who come to him in the same way, in accordance with each person's temperament. Immediately after Bhagavan's Mahasamadhi, even I used to wonder how I could continue to stay at the ashram. While most devotees left the ashram then, they all came back just like the birds to the paimaram, palm tree. Today, the number of devotees has multiplied 100 times over. Everywhere we have Ramana Kendras and Ramana Bhakta Sabhas. I don't have the competence even to speak about Bhagavan's Shakti. See, these people are so eager to videotape me speaking about Bhagavan. Isn't this also Bhagavan's doing?